Sure, yeah. You know, I'm the only native Texan here, I guess, you know, but...
Well, that's why we're letting you start.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good. That's good. You know, I remember the first time I ever went to the Sportatorium, I was probably 7, 8 years old, something like that, and I saw Bull Curry, Danny McShane.
Right.
Yeah, you probably knew some of these guys. Red Bastine. Man, I can't remember all the people that were on that card that night. But it, you know, as a kid, I kept thinking, you know, this is bigger than life. You know, and Texas wrestling is kind of like that, kind of bigger than life. You know, and then went back a couple of times when I was a kid, and never thought that one of these days I'd be standing in that ring. You know, and one of those dream come true deals.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think that's happened to a lot of us.
It did. Yeah. Yeah.
James, as you said, the names you've mentioned. Bull Curry. I never met Bull Curry, but I know his grandson fairly well, and I know Bull's son fairly
Freddie.
Well.
Yeah.
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 And Danny McShane, I know him by proxy because my favorite tag team partner of all times, one of the greatest Texas legends of all times, the Maniac Mark Lewin, the
yes.
Purple Haze.
Yeah.
He was Danny McShane's brother-in-law.
Yep.
And, you know, when I was a kid, you were talking about going to the Sportatorium. I didn't have that chance. But there was a national television wrestling product that people don't realize. There was like four national wrestling products coming out at the same time. There was two out of Chicago, one out of L.A., one out of Bridgeport with Vince Sr., and the other one was Texas Wrestling. And I got to see Bull Curry. I got to see Danny McShane. I got to see the great Pepe Gomez, who later on I tagged up with. And there's something special about Texas. And I'm a historian, and like we're going to have the world's strongest man, and who's lifted a weight no one's lifted, and besides being the strongest man, he's really intelligent. We had just a brief conversation.
And he's a Texan.
Yeah, and he's a Texan.
And,
he told me why he's so strong, and it hit me. He understands things that most people don't. But there's a unique thing about Texas. It is the only state that was republic on itself.
Yeah.
That's why you got the Lone Star.
That's it.
There is a unique thing about Texas when people talk about that are Texans and they talk about it, it's like they're talking that they live in another country. And God bless them, it is. Because everything from Texas is bigger, it's badder, and it's more exciting. And I just said bigger and badder. We're going to see him later on, Mark Henry. Is there anybody bigger than Mark Henry?
No.
Became, from Texas, became one of the guys that followed in Texans' footsteps, became World Heavyweight Champion. But then when I said bigger, I also, the first thing that flashed in my mind was Bruiser Brody.
Yep.
The Funks.
Yes.
And Mark has taken up that banner and come full circle with, from, think about this, from the 40s, there was Texas Wrestling. They had their own champion at the time,
mm-hmm.
when the old man Funk hated Roger so bad, right?
Yep.
He had Kaniski as the champion. All through the WWE, where Mark becomes World Heavyweight Champion. So there's been a thread of Texas wrestling throughout the history of pro wrestling in this country.
Well, and that's the thing about all of us. You know, we've got a threads that tie us all together. You know, just a few miles down the road, we're at Southern Junction here in Irving right now. We're getting ready for a big night. You know,
yeah.
coming tomorrow night, Sweethearts Brawl for SWE Fury, and you know, I'm just thinking, just a few miles down the road, every Friday night, I'd be in that Sportatorium. That same place that I got to go when I was a kid and see all those people and that were bigger than life to me, and then some of them became friends of mine later on. Red Bastien was a very close friend. That's the way this business is, though. I know you started out as a referee too, and we had the same experiences in different places.
Right. Well, you guys were speaking about Texas. I'm just glad to have the opportunity to be able to work here now. You know, I never did work in Texas as a territory. I always, when I was in WWE and WCW, I had a chance to come to Texas just to work on different shows or different events, right. But I never had any time, you know, to spend any time there. But during my time in this professional wrestling business, I had a chance to meet a lot of guys that worked in the Texas territory. Gino Hernandez, God rest his soul. Chris Adams was another guy I had a chance to meet. Hollywood John Tatum. The first match that I ever refereed was Ron Bass and Black Bart.
Oh,
okay,
goodness.
So you know, you
Black
two,
Bart.
Two Texans right there. So I had a chance to meet a lot of guys that worked in Texas, so I was able to work with them. But you know, I guess this is kind of like a blessing for me. You know, I came to work for SWE, and it was just something, like I always tell people, SWE didn't call me, I called them. But I'm so glad that I'm able to be a part of it now and to learn about Texas style wrestling. And that's what we're producing on SWE TV, Texas style wrestling. That's what's going to be. You can't forget what brought you to the dance. And I think that's what has happened to our sport. You know, I look at it now and I can just see it ain't what it used to be because they done forgot what brought them here. So you're going to have to go back and give it to them if you don't.
Well, some of us haven't forgotten. I see where Mark Henry called out somebody. And I'm going to make sure, don't tell Mark this, I'm going to make sure it says I'm a Mark Henry type of guy.
He may be listening.
And the other guy, a Ryback type of guy, probably won't sell a dime, but I'm going to make a killing of Mark Henry shirt.
And I heard you guys talking, speaking about Mark Henry, you know, and I never will forget when I first went to WWF when it was then, I had a chance to ride with Mark Henry and D'Lo, and I remember Mark brought me right here to Texas. I had a chance to meet his lovely mom, and she, what a wonderful woman she was. So I had a chance to ride with Mark and D'Lo, so they taught me a little bit about the Texas area, but not too much because we was having a lot of fun at that time. And then a lot of times, I don't remember.
I want to hear those stories. That's what I want to hear.
And James, you probably remember this, when the height of when I was in Florida, they used to bring me and Mark in here to wrestle Buzz and Matt Bourne to put us in our place, I guess.
Yes.
And we go 45 minutes.
Yes.
And it was brutal. But it was Texas style wrestling.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is a special aura of Texas style wrestling because I hate to use this word, but there's nothing prearranged about Texas style wrestling.
You better be ready to go. That's all you can do.
When you come into a building and you see Terry Funk lacing his boots up and chewing tobacco and spitting it on the floor.
And drinking a beer.
Yeah, and drinking a beer.
Yeah.
You know you're in for a long night.
You better believe it.
And Bruiser Brody, I mean, people would... I remember I was lucky enough that the great Blackjack Mulligan, he let me book for him. And I would... And Mulligan and Brody were dear friends. And I would put Brody on the TV list against guys, and guys would come in, real young guys, real cocky, like myself when I was a kid, coming in whistling, woo, woo, woo. And they'd look up the sheet, them against Bruiser Brody, woo, 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 back out the door and gone. You know, I say, well, I guess he's going to do an interview, you know. But I mean, there was something that can't be duplicated, except SWE Fury has.
Well, we're doing our best.
And that's what is so amazing. They have taken something from the ashes, and I hate to be cliche, it's risen like a phoenix from the ashes. And we are on a roll here. Hey, Mike and Max. Somebody better tell them one of them needs to pay each other the money.
He is their problem.
Yeah, I mean...
They're his problem,
yeah.
I'll put it that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody said to me, wouldn't you like to get in there and wrestle one of them in your prime? Hell no! I don't want to end my career.
That's like asking if you want to wrestle Bruiser Brody.
Yeah, and then Charlie Haas, who's really lost his mind, obviously.
Yeah, he's deranged.
Yeah, he's great. Tony's always been a little off.
And then we got Tim Storm, former NWA champion, who to me is one of the great. He reminds me so much of Dory Funk and Jack Briscoe. The way he works reminds me of Dory Funk, but the way he carries himself reminds me of Jack Briscoe.
Yeah.
I mean, you have, and now we got Jack Sting coming in, another former world champion. I mean, it seems to me that the word is out on SWE Fury, and people lining up to come in here. And I'm going to say something, Teddy, it's no small part because of you two.
Tom has
been the brains behind this, but you guys have been schlepping, so you guys deserve something.
We're very fortunate that we have a great support system that's not seen on camera. Like Teddy says, they're above us, but you know, we're just the face of it. But you know, we've got really great support in the office that you know, Tom Lance and Jason Jarrett and those guys they've given us the platform to do what we're doing. And you know, people ask what Texas wrestling is, and it's a lot of things, really.
Yeah.
You know, it's brawling, it's there's a lot of technical wrestlers involved.
And I tell you one thing, it's something that I want to be a part of. It's what I was brought up with. You know, when I first saw SWE, I was just flipping around on my Facebook page and I saw it, and that drew my attention. You know, I started looking at what I learned, you know, in my days of coming up in professional wrestling. I come up with Kevin Sullivan as a guy right there that taught me almost everything I know.
He started you, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
He taught me almost everything I know. He was responsible for me becoming to be a manager, you know. I started DJing for him one night. That was my career. Yeah, I was a disc jock on a radio station. And so we was riding around, so I started DJing for him and Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert. So I was turning the radio down, DJing. And I'm thinking I'm just showing them this, but they saw something else. They like, guys, a guy can talk. You know, I didn't know, but they took it back and told the office that I could talk, and that's how I ended up managing, because of him and Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert.
Amazing.
Well, here's the thing, James. I've had the pleasure to know you over the years, but this is the first time we really got to work with one another. But Teddy, we've been around production people, you and I together.
Yeah.
This Bob is a diamond in the rough, and I told Tom that. He is brilliant. I mean, he's on top of things, and when he took over the production value was through the roof.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're lucky at SWE Fury that we have him. Because
Bob Marlin is an outstanding guy, man. I hadn't had a chance to really meet him until I came to Texas, but I've seen him so many years, many, many years on the TV out here with World Class. And so, you know, just to be able to get a chance to meet him live and in person and to watch him work, it's an honor, man. He knows what he's doing.
I've known Bob quite a few years. You know, what he did is and y'all probably
I don't
know,
you mean
probably,
to interrupt you, but you've known a lot of people for a
while. Yeah, I know. Well, I can say that about all of us.
Yeah.
We're all a little bit long in the tooth right now.
Yeah, we know a lot of people.
Been around, yes. You know, Bob came around back years ago, but I think it was back in the early 90s or something, the first time I met him. And he was a disc jockey. Mm-hmm. At a radio station in Tyler, and he wanted to get involved in wrestling. He wanted to be a commentator in wrestling, so he goes to the wrestling school to learn what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how to apply the holes, all that kind of thing. That's how dedicated he was. So you know, it means a lot to have people like that around that can. That care about our sport.
That's why he's good at his job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank God for Bob. I love him to death, man.
Yeah. I would like to just say one thing. A dear friend of me and Teddy and probably you, James.
Oh, yeah.
Pass on to them.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A classier guy, I don't know if there was anybody more classy than Butch Reed.
Yeah.
Butch Reed drew money everywhere he went. Butch Reed was a pleasure to be around. Teddy, you managed him and Ron, one of the greatest, and they don't get the recognition.
No.
One of the greatest tag teams of all time is Doom.
Yeah.
Hey, what I used to love was when the Steiners would get a little bit, you know, on that track where I just put Doom. Steiners. That kind of calmed their asses down, right?
And that was a real fight.
Yeah.
Well, those two guys were for real. I have no question about that. Yeah, Butch was. That's why he was what he was. He was a real thing, man.
Yeah.
And you know, you can't beat that, and that's what we're trying to do here. So that fits right in. And it's sad when we lose our old friends and guys we work with. I know you work with him a lot closer.
Yeah, I traveled up and down the road with him and Ron for many years. And I had a chance to see Butch maybe last month. Him and Ron and I did a virtual signing in Charlotte, North Carolina for the High Spots. And Butch was there, so I did get a chance to see him like a month ago, I believe it was, a couple of months ago. But, you know, he seemed, he was in pretty good health, you know what I mean? He was happy and everything, so, you know, you wouldn't think that he was, you know, having any problems. But I did get a chance to talk to his sister, and I think she told me that he had a couple of strokes, and then he went into a coma, but he had come out of the coma, and he was just back, you know, he was still in the hospital. But to learn him passing is...
He could have made a million as a voiceover on movies.
Yeah, he had a great voice.
Oh, yeah.
He had a great voice, didn't he?
Yeah, and
what's his favorite word? You gonna taste these soup bones? I'm gonna taste these soup bones, right up.
Yeah, we've lost so many good friends. You know, it makes you think. You know, you gotta remember to let them know how you feel about them every once in a while. You know, and stay in touch, that kind of thing. And you know, speaking of that, you know, we got a guy here that's gonna sit in with us for a little bit, maybe tell a few little stories let us know what he feels like about being here and involved in SWE Fury. Mark Henry, are you out there somewhere?
Well, let me tell you a little.
Come on in here, brother.
Let me tell you a little thing about Mark Henry.
Yeah.
So, I've just met Mark at a cauliflower club about maybe 2 years ago. What a class guy! But I told Mark when I met him, I said, I see you every day. He looked at me like I was crazy. I got a picture of him when he's holding that deadlifting the world, it looked like, with one hand. So I'm an ex-powerlifter that came nowhere near. I could probably have dusted, put the chalk on Mark's hand. But, brother, he's a true athlete in three sports. And, Mark, thank you for coming.
Well, thank you all for having me. I'm going to take my mask off now.
I just got a question. I mean, you became a big star in WWE. Where did your interest in wrestling start?
My grandmother. My grandmother was a fanatic. We used to go to Lafayette, Louisiana, Beaumont Civic Center. Mm. And she was a big fan of Ernie Ladd. And he was from our area, so it was like he was the neighborhood or the community hero.
Right.
And she just was like, anytime you want to go, just let me know. I'll get you a ticket. And that became our Saturday thing. Like, I would go with my grandmother to go watch pro wrestling, and I became a big fan.
You know, that's interesting, too. You know, Ernie was a legit professional athlete, just like yourself, you know, and transitioned into wrestling. And you know, well, what a guy. You talk about drawing money.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I was a little kid, and I went to an AFL game, the Chargers against the Boston Patriots in Fenway Park. Not the New England Patriots, the Boston Patriots. And Ernie was smart then. He took his helmet off, which nobody did, and went down and hit the goal post. And his size made the goal post go woo, woo, woo. And the other thing about Ernie, one of the classiest guys I ever met in my life.
Absolutely.
I was on my way out. I wrestled in New York for the old man, and my position was to get the guys ready to wrestle Bruno. So they would give me the wins on the guys leaving, Spiros and Mario and the different guys, and then I put the guys over. And I was booked against Ernie, and Ernie was going to wrestle Bruno the following Monday, and this was a Saturday, and they said 4 minutes, Ernie goes over with what he wants. Ernie said, we're going to go 15, I'm going to give you the thumb. Ernie gave me about 14 and a half minutes. He gave me the thumb, feet up on the ropes, so he had a riot. And I thought, wow, he didn't have to do that. You know, I'm on my way out too. You know what I mean? I'm on my way out, and he's going to Bruno on Monday. And he was just a class act, and it was a pleasure to be around Ernie, because I'm not going to say which row where it was, but he was so good. He would say, you know, I'd invite both of you to sit under the learning tree, but you'll never understand. The other one's, his back must be sore for carrying you. Correct me, guys, if I'm wrong. Wasn't he the first real black booker we had in this?
Yeah,
as far as I know.
Was.
Yeah,
he was.
Bill Watts.
Yeah. He was a really, really smart guy, too. And along with being funny, he said, come here, Henry. Sit under the learning tree. I got something to tell you. And he was still, you know, good friends with Vince, and Vince told him what he was planning, and I came to a TV and he was there, and I wanted to look around like, is anybody seeing this? Like, I mean, I was just the biggest mark you ever seen in your life, and he just told me, come over here and sit down and talk to me. And it was like one of the best conversations I ever had with any wrestler to that point. And all of it was not about wrestling.
Yeah.
He talked to me about life and respect for the business, and don't let your head get too big, you know, to where you feel like you're bigger than the business. He said, there's nobody here in this building that's bigger than wrestling, including me. And that's the mentality that I ended up having my whole career, is I always felt like the business was the meat and the potatoes, and we were just the roll or the salad. Yeah. The business is the things that matter most. And
well, it's called survival. That's how you learn how to survive.
You know something, I don't mean to interrupt it, but what Ernie did was unparalleled in the wrestling business. Back in the day, when he was in New York for Vince Sr., it was him, Billy Graham, and Ivan Koloff. Well, nobody can work on the main event every show, right? Ernie was the guy that almost formed the union, said, the three of us are going to get main event pay on every show, no matter what position we're in. Okay, maybe Koloff has wrestled San Martino, but I'm getting Pedro ready to take that strap when Bruno sits down, and I'm a real athlete. And the old man caved. Try doing that today.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to find anybody that's going to stand up for the guys like that these days.
Yeah. But you know what? I think a lot of it is guys back then, and even now, there's people that don't take care of their money. And, you know, the biggest fear is to not be able to pay the bills the next month.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, fortunately enough for me, I had smart people around me, and I made some good decisions, but I also made some dumb decisions, you know, and I think that give the younger guys that knowledge and say, look, man, I know you're making good money and you think it's going to be like this for the next 30 years, but, and that's not the way wrestling works. You got a season or two, you know, you might got two or three runs and then it's over. And then you do what you're supposed to do and you help the business. And that's kind of like, you know, my spiel to the young guys. I'm like, listen, you watch wrestling all the time. You see the same five or six guys at the top, and you see a lot of rotary players.
Right.
I was like, I hope you can be one of those top five or six guys, but history says that you're going to be a rotary player.
Yeah.
And which we all, you know, we see them on the way up and we see them on the way down.
Yeah.
And that's what the kids need to know. I say kids, I'm not elder statesmen like you guys, but I'm getting there. I'm starting to feel it when I wake up in the morning.
I'm sure to the guys that you're talking to, you are, and that's the important thing, you know, because you've been there and done that and experienced it. I wonder if the guys get enough of that these days.
They don't. They feel like they got two nickels to rub together and it's gonna last forever.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of these guys now that are in the business, a lot of young guys, they have no responsibility. They have, you know, no wife, no kids or nothing. So they don't really have nothing to take care of but themselves. So they really don't know how to take care of themselves. I never forget, Jim Ross used to always come in the locker room and he'd always say, "Save your money, kid." And I never did pay that no attention. But as I got older and I stayed in the business, you know, now I understand exactly what he meant. He was telling us something, but nobody wasn't really paying him any attention. You know, that, oh, he don't know what he's talking about. Yeah, he does.
I remember a story about Ernie where this is when Mark was, before your time, when drugs were really prevalent in our business. And Ernie went into the dressing room when he was the booker in Louisiana and had a gram of cocaine in a bag in a Cougarette. And he said, "Which one of the, I don't know if it's real cocaine, but he said, which one of these are you guys gonna buy? The guy that buys the Cougarette is setting his life up the right way. The guy that's buying the gram is gonna fail." Couldn't be any straighter than that.
That was straightforward right there.
Pretty profound.
You know, it's funny, you mentioned the Cougarans, like the first trip that I went to South Africa, there was a guy that said that, hey, there's a jewelry store here where they're liquidating all of the stuff, they're going out of business, and they have the Cougarans. He said, "I'm going over there." He's like, "You want to go? You can go with me." And I said, "Yeah, I'd love to go see," because I just wanted to see the history of it. And they had like, I mean, I don't know if I ever saw that many police. I mean, it looked like a military force. And they had 500.
Did they know you were coming?
No. I bet when they saw me, they were like, "Oh, shit, I'm glad y'all brought the big guys." But they had 500, and it was a line of people, like 1,000. I mean, it was so. It looked like a wrestling show was about to start. And this wrestling guy, brought us, you know, PJ Black's dad.
Okay.
Like, so we, you know, before he got killed, got arrested, so.
Yeah.
We go in there, and I said, "Well, how much are they?" And he's like, "Well, it depends on the age." He's like, "They're all 99.9% gold, and there's no filler." Like, in America, when they have the gold coins, a lot of the time they were gold-plated, or gold-tempered, or whatever, but... Right. They were heavy, and I bought one, and I still have it, and it's like one of the things that about my career that I think about all the time is the guy told me, he said, "Hey, don't buy it to use it." He said, "You buy it so that it stays, the history stays with you."
Right.
And I think about it all the time, like, you know, the wrestling business is that. Every match that I've had, I can't remember every spot or every finish, but I remember how it felt with that guy, the relationship with that guy. And there's some guys that I really didn't have a relationship with. I didn't know them. All they did was say, "Hey," at the beginning, you remember when Thuggin' and Buggin' with me and Rodney Mack. Them over. 15 minutes, and that's all you knew.
Yeah.
And then you might talk to them a little bit in the ring, but I didn't know these people, you know. And then down the road, it started getting to the point to where we had shared locker rooms, and the business changed dramatically at that point.
Right.
And there was no more territories. All the territories started getting bought out, and it was just a little different, you know. But I grew to understand that the experiences in wrestling or where the value was. And I'll never forget a lot of those, you know, those lessons, you know, with those different guys. And you mentioned, I heard y'all talking about the Ryback guy. I feel sorry for him. I really do. And I had like five or six people that was like, man, don't talk about him no more, because you talking about him is giving him life. Yeah. He said that he was dead a long time ago.
Yeah.
If you feel like you don't love something or you don't want to be around something, you divorce it and you move on.
Right, right.
And it felt like he divorced it and left it alone, but he's the one that made the phone call and go, hey, what you doing?
Right.
You know, so you, when you start talking about something that I fed my children with,
right,
that the roof over our head, those bumps paid for, the lessons and the relationships that I have with people, is garbage, is phony, it's fake, it's a prop, it's not real, because you didn't attain it.
Yes.
You didn't win it.
Yes.
It's given to you. No. I earned every stripe I ever got. And Yokozuna was the one that told me, he's like, you can come out here and bump all you want to. Vince was like, hey, he intimidating. He gonna put you in jeopardy. He's like, is he safe? From what I understand, you ask some people that he worked with. That's how it got around. Like,
here's the thing.
I'm punching pillowcases for 10 months.
They knew they were gonna make money.
I don't even know them. But they put that on you, because you were going to lead the company. Not just because of your ability in the ring. It was your stature as a human being. And I think I've liked you from the minute I met you, because you have this stature. You know who you are. You've been raised right.
Yeah.
And you respect the business. For him to say it's all props and everybody should get paid the
hurt same, my feelings. It hurt
it
my soul.
It should have hurt your feelings, because they, you know how it means for you to carry that strap? You're feeding the rest of the folks' families.
Yeah.
And I always thought about that. Teddy and I talked about that years ago. I said, hey, we're in a position, Teddy, here now, when Teddy became the hot manager. I said, you know, there's people that if we don't draw, they're not going to get paid. And I understood that right from the beginning. And you know who told me that? Ernie Ladd. Ernie Ladd.
He understood it better than everybody.
He understood it better than anybody. That he understood when you're in that position, it ain't just for you, man. You got to draw because you got people
depending on you.
Yeah, that maybe right. aren't in the same status as you.
I never missed a shot. We showed up late a couple of times.
And that wasn't intentional.
It wasn't intentional. No. It wasn't because we was jacking around. Just, you know, hey, sometimes you read the wrong paper. You're like, oh, that's tomorrow.
There wasn't no GPSs or none of that. So, you know, you stop and asking people, how do I get down here?
Yeah, you show up a little late. But, it pissed me off. And, you know, he tried to make it like it's some kind of legal battle. I'm going to sue you. And that's the horrible thing about, you know, the mentality of people around wrestling now. We've let too many snakes in.
I believe that's true.
There's a bunch of guys that don't deserve to be in wrestling.
Yes. Yeah.
Because their heart is soft. Not just they mind, but they only think about them.
Well, that,
and they don't have those conversations like we had with Ernie.
Yeah. Another Mark made a statement about something like that this last week, or a couple weeks ago, that kind of stirred some things up. Mark Calloway. Yeah, I know what he meant.
What he meant was guys were more loose cannons. Guys were a little bit more
uninhibited back then. And, you know, there were guys that would stab you. There were guys that would shoot you if they felt like they can get away with it. And today we're a corporate entity now.
Right.
There were no drug policies. Think about how many guys no-showed or guys that, you know, they got drugged up and they couldn't walk to the ring.
Yeah.
And then they said, oh, we need somebody else. And, like, not being reliable. The business, the only way the business was ever going to change and that it was going to get controlled to where it was looked at as a legitimate, a really tangible business that you can actually trade on the stock market is if you got rid of all those guys.
Right.
And that's what happened.
Yeah.
I don't see nothing wrong with that. I would rather have... And, oh, hey, man, you can take that. You got to take that.
No, I don't.
Oh, come on. Dang, I wanted to ask. I wanted to say something. But
she says you didn't leave the money.
I didn't. Oh, that's my son, and he's not getting the money.
He did not. Mine either. But you get to that point to where all of those people that you try to publicly trade something on the stock market, you can't trust them to do the right thing. So you have to say, let me get somebody that can. Did you know at WWE, at one point, there was 32 guys that had college degrees?
No, I didn't.
32. And 2 PhDs.
Wow.
So that... You go back 30 years of pro wrestling, there was no college graduates in wrestling.
They, couldn't write PhD. Three letters in a row, no.
I bet they count that money, though. But that's it was the difference. We've evolved as not only just as wrestlers, but as men.
As a society, too.
And as a society. So, you know, so when people take punches and stabs from the peanut gallery, I feel like it's a personal attack. You're attacking me personally.
Well, he was.
And I'm still young enough that I'm still wanting to, like, get it in if I have to.
Yeah.
You know, the guys like that don't understand too that promoters and business owners in wrestling, they're not stupid. So they're gonna put the people that are gonna make them money on top.
Amen. And reliable.
And that's right. and are reliable, exactly. All those traits, you know, and that's the way. I mean, you did the same thing with WCW. You're not gonna put some idiot on top there. No. You know, somebody you couldn't trust. You know,
well, that's the way it always been.
Yeah.
That's a rule of law.
Nothing new.
Can I just switch something to Mark a little bit different? Mark, when you were a kid growing up, you said you and your grandma were big wrestling fans. Who was your favorite wrestler?
JYD.
I bet he was.
And I we would go to Louisiana. I cried like a baby. Ted DiBiase, and I talked to Ted about this, and it's a funny story. He remembered when I brought it up. I said, I don't know if it was a blade or if it was Hardway, but I was in Lafayette, Louisiana, on the third row. You remember the bicycle rack thing?
Yeah.
And dog blood was squirting out like, tss, 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 and they had to stop the match and take him to the hospital.
Right.
But Ted DiBiase got in the ring and he cut this, and anybody else that wants some is going to get the same treatment. And he was going off. And I'm crying. I was like, I hope he died. I just want him to, like, he hurt JYD. And I said, do you remember? He said, oh, my God, I do remember that. He said, you were there? I said, yeah, I was 8.
Wow.
He said, damn, I'm old.
There's another guy that drew some money, man.
Oh, my God, Ted DiBiase was so good, man.
Yeah.
I look back now at, you know, when I saw him as a kid, and I didn't appreciate how good he was. I just, was mad at him because the same thing with Kevin. First time I met Kevin, like I was holding on to my heart like this because I ain't wanting to take my heart away. Like he scared the shit out of me as a little boy. I told him, I said, man, I couldn't even, like whenever you came on, I would leave the room. Like that's how scary it was for me as a kid.
He's the devil.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't realize that wasn't real fans, that you know, they modern wrestling fans. Like the business was different back then. Like you know, my godson, he got to see Kane when he was probably about 7 or 8. And Kane used to scare him because of the pyro, and he had the mask, and he looked evil. Mm-hmm. And he just was like, no, I don't want to see it, I don't want to see it. But he didn't, if Kane was to work like Kevin worked, like back, he would never watch wrestling again. Like, it was different.
Well, don't you think that's kind of missing a little bit, though?
It is missing.
I think making people care is the big thing, you know? Today I see a lot of wrestling, and the whole point is just to get a reaction.
Yeah.
And instead of making people feel something and care about something, and you can do that a lot of different ways, you know. But I think that's one of the things that we're trying to get back to, is making people care about what happened. You know, we may do it in a little wild way sometimes, but we want them to care.
Right. Yeah. You know?
And we obviously have hit a nerve that we're on the right track, or Mark wouldn't be here, Teddy wouldn't be here. There's a reason why that the four of us are sitting at this table, because we're wrestling fans.
Yeah.
We're still 8 years absolutely old.
And I watched two shows, and the thing that you said feeling, that's what I got out of y'all show. And the reason I'm here, and I talked to Teddy about it, is because the guys made me feel like I did when I was 8, 10 years old. Yeah. Because of the way that the work is, but also the way things, the perception.
That's it.
Of the business. And I say the business, but the perception of wrestling.
Right.
It's so important from a psychology standpoint. I mean, you use evil and that was good. You got big versus small, fast versus slow. As many things that you can put against in a situation in a match. But if I don't feel it and believe it, then you're just out there in tight clothes dancing around.
We've all been in the business a long time. I mean, goes back to the, what, 70s for you?
Yeah.
70s for you, you know, and I was in the 80s and
80s,
you know, and you've been in here 20-something years yourself, Mark, you know. I still, if I watch a match and it does me that way, it gets me, it draws me in, makes me care about it, I can still be a fan.
Yeah.
And I know every detail about how this thing works. You know, and it doesn't matter to me because I can feel that and I care about it. But the problem is I don't see a whole lot of it.
Yeah. You see it in spurs. You see like 5 or 6 people that do it, and then everybody else
every
is.
Every once in a while.
And you can name the guys that know, that understand that. Yeah.
Well,
you're right.
But that's what we're doing in SWE.
Exactly.
We're getting people that understand. Yeah. And that's what we're going back to.
And like teaching those that don't.
That's right.
We're
exactly.
Getting them to realize the willing suspension of disbelief. That when you come into that building and you see Max and Mike and Tim Storm and your former partner,
Rodney Mack, yes.
One of the greatest performers in the world. Okay, maybe it takes you a couple of minutes, but you're in there and buying it. Teddy knows my wife. My wife was a big wrestling fan. She saw somebody showed her a match with me and Andre. And she said, he couldn't have been that big. I said, why not? She said, because he hit you and you just shook your head. I said,
well, did you tell her you don't sell nothing?
Yeah,
did you?
Yeah. I said to her, let me tell you.
Damn, Teddy, stop shooting.
But it's the truth.
No sale, Kevin.
I said to her, here's the difference. I'm 5'8", he was 7'3". When you saw the alien, and everybody forgets this, remember the alien when he popped out of the chest?
Yeah.
He was this big. If you had hit him with a fly swatter, he would have been dead. By the end of the night, he was bigger than the building. I said, I'm the alien. I'm this big. But at the end of the night, they think I'm bigger than the building.
But that's,
and it makes it psychology.
You can make people. Yeah, you can make people accept
anything. I still
anything.
Think
yeah.
He should have beat the shit out of you, but you have this guy coming into the ring. I always say this, Mark. Even at my advanced age, I'm going to come down.
No sell, Kevin.
I'm going to come. This is another no sell. I'm coming out of the bar. Me and Teddy, we're coming out of the bar. We turn the corner to get the car. There's two sidewalks. Mark Henry's walking on one, and one of the young kids is walking the other. Me and Teddy are going to jump on that other sidewalk because we don't know what kind of Mark is. Right? We'll take our chances. We'll double
with the
team.
The little guy.
And we'll double team Teddy. But I mean, and that's what it's about. You look at Rodney. Brother, I'm scared when I see Rodney. He's such a teddy bear, but he is such an athlete. And that's, Mark, do you think that's something, you know, you said it was harder back in our day, we let too many snakes in. Do you think it was because back in the territory days in Florida, you could beat anybody up you wanted in any public place, but if you lost, you were fired.
Yeah.
And me and Mark Lewin used to go shopping with our robes on. We traveled with our robes on. So people maybe
I can see that.
Maybe people wouldn't believe the gimmick. But when you see a guy in a gym walking in with a robe with bare feet and says, "We'll travel with me this summer. We're going barefooted."
Mark, it was not a gimmick.
No, Mark wasn't a gimmick. But I mean, and Mark was such a great athlete. I mean, you know, I mean, you were really a unique. Weren't you champion in two other sports?
Yeah, and world champion in three sports, and national champion in another.
But you made people believe you could get in jeopardy sometimes.
I did.
And that's the key to it. You know, one of my best friends in the business and our mutual buddy, John Layfield.
Okay.
You know, we've talked a lot of times about his angle when he had with Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah.
You know, Eddie made him, basically. And the size difference, you know, that. But you got to find a way to make yourself police. In jeopardy. But make people believe that that's possible. That's what happens, you know? And that's a skill that, for a big man like yourself, man, I see so many big guys that don't understand how to do that. And there's a real art to working that way.
Yeah, you see a lot of big guys that as soon as you hit them with one punch, they go off their feet.
They want to do flips over the top rope?
Yeah,
because they want to be cool. And I always subscribe to the boring ass heel mentality. If I'm trying to make this baby face look like $1 million, if I'm doing cool shit, people gonna be confused.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be a boring ass heel. I'm gonna be dirty. I'm gonna be conniving, and I'm gonna lie.
You gonna stop their
the referee? Yeah. I mean, you know, there was a time when you couldn't hit with a closed fist.
Right.
You punch somebody, referee was going to get in your ass. And I would use that as an example. You could hit somebody and the referee would go, hey. Like, I mean, the guy would go down like I stabbed him with an ice pick. And then the referee, did you? No, it was the open hand. You remember them days?
I'd always make it. That's
and then the referee.
The referee
would get behind me.
Yeah.
I'd grab the headlock and I'd make everybody see the knuckle coming, guy, and get him again.
Right.
And now the referee is like, okay. And he starts counting. Like, you're like, he's going to throw me out. And I'm like, no, I'm sorry, please. You get a big dude begging, he lying already, say he ain't doing it. Now he's begging, please don't throw me out. Please, I promise, I'm going to be good. And now he goes to grabbing the dude's hair. And you just progress to something more violent every time. And these guys today, they go from
they don't even lock up.
Start punching.
They throw up. Yeah. There you go. I'm going to boot you. I'm going to punch you.
The baby face starts with that. The baby face
yeah.
starts.
Yeah. And I'm just confused as hell. And I'm just I don't understand.
Here's what I'm confused about. I didn't mean to cut you
off. No, go ahead.
Here's what I'm confused about, Mark. You know, they talk about their ratings going down. They have the answer because they got the library. When you were drawing money, they got the library when Undertaker was drawing money. Austin Rock. Don't they ever go back and look up what... Hey, it's like we're playing the Super Bowl this weekend, right? Aren't the Bucks looking at everything Kansas City did this year?
Every play they made.
Yeah.
Every statistic, yeah. every... I mean...
On third and ten, you can guarantee Brady's going to throw to Gronkowski or something. Mahone, he's on two and less than eight, he's going to run. I mean,
oh, they're going to line up in a big pass formation, and you're going to look like they're going to run, but he's going to run 2 or 3 yards and fall down and get the first down.
Yeah.
Like prepare for the outcome like you did prepare.
Right.
I think people, they get to the arena and they start thinking then. Like, I never did that. I got in trouble one time.
I got it
from Rip Rogers.
Yeah.
Really?
Rip told me, this is when I came back from Canada. And I went to Ohio Valley wrestling, OVW. And he said, you know what, you got some good work in today. Tomorrow, you know, I want you to have a 10-minute match, but I want you to think about working a little bit differently. I want you to go back and watch some Andre stuff, and I want you to go back and Big John Studd and Bam Bam Big. It was all these big guys. So I got back to the room, and this girl called me that I knew, and I ain't get a chance to watch no tapes, but nothing wrestling wise. And man, I got back the next day, and I still wrestled like I did before. Like, and he was like, "You didn't look at nothing," and I was like, "How can you tell?"
Yeah.
He said, "Cause you're doing the same thing, and you don't think that if I see it, that the people out there don't see it." And we from that point on, it was like, I wanted to learn more, and Jimmy Cornette had like an unbelievable library. I mean, he's probably got as big a library as anybody in the world.
Yeah.
And I started just studying. And he would give out booklets of the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and... you know, what he thought the top 10 matches in that decade were and who was more like your size, and you just try to work like that style.
Right.
Man, it changed everything. When I came back in 2001, I was a different dude, wasn't I?
Yeah.
And, you know, I have my regrets about everything that happened before. From 97 to 2000, but the fact that I did that studying and I took the initiative to make myself understand the psychology of wrestling and how to tell stories and how to not just do good for me, but how to make this guy that I never met look like a million bucks.
The light came on.
Yeah. The light came on.
Yeah.
And you, if you don't study it though, it won't come on.
But one thing you did is you cleaned up a lot of stuff Rip Rogers told you.
Yeah.
I can promise you he didn't say it nearly as nicely.
No, he didn't.
I know.
Rip Rogers came on my show on Busted Open and broke the world record for the most F words in a 10-minute span.
Yeah, he could beat us all in.
I'm serious. In 10 minutes,
world champion.
He said 132 cuss words.
Yep. Yeah.
We counted. Yeah. I'm not. You think I'm making it up?
No, oh, I did that too.
132 times.
Yeah, and he even makes some up sometimes.
Mark, I followed your career. When did you go to Canada, and where did you go?
In I got sent to Calgary.
Okay.
And with Stu Hart and Brett and in 98.
Was that in the winter?
It was.
Oh.
And the snow was 3 feet off the ground.
Don't have to tell
and
me.
You know, like there.
That's tough on protection.
And any other cold weather climates, yeah. The doors don't open in. The doors open out because if you open the door, all the snow will come in.
Right.
So all the doors opened out. So it's snowing through the night. And I don't realize, so I'm trying to open my door and I can't get out. And nobody told me that, hey, when it snows, take the inside exits because that inside that you can get out, you just, yeah. It's just a long way.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I stayed there. Gee, gee, just enough to where I could squeeze and get out. I was like, damn, where did all this snow come from? Like, it just in one night, man, it just like, it dumped to about that high, and I hated the snow being a Texas boy. But when I got over to Stu's house and you know got to go down in the dungeon and start rolling around with him and Tyson Kidd, you remember Tyson
yeah,
Kidd?
Yeah.
Tyson Kidd was like 8 years old, 9 years old. He was a little boy. Him and Natty, they was like little kids yeah. running around. And Leo Burke was up there. He was
the
trainer.
What a great one. Yes.
And him and Rip Rogers are the best two coaches I ever had because of the psychology, not just because of the you know, whooping you.
Leo was one of the best that nobody knows about.
He's the one. Yes. He's a guy that you know. I have to. He's the one that had me hanging up the pillowcases and punching the pillowcases and doing all this crazy stuff that you would. You would be like, yeah, you didn't do that. No, I did that. I punched a pillowcase for an hour
right.
every day.
Right.
And I busted Andrew Martin's nose the first day I got to Canada.
Was he your first pillowcase?
This is before the pillowcases.
That's why he's punching pillowcases.
And he said, come here, let me show you how to do that. And I was like, oh, like a fool. I stuck my head in that. And he grabbed me and he, bam, just blooded my nose. I mean, what'd you do? He said, you did it to him? And I was, okay, point taken.
You brought something up when you were talking about punching a while ago a little bit, about how you used to get heat that way. Teddy and I both started out as referees. One of the things I think is really missing in the business today.
People
overall,
don't know how to use the ref.
No rules.
Oh my
no
God.
Rules. And
going
well,
out to the floor?
You can't use a referee if you don't have rules.
Yeah.
I mean, how can a guy get hit
you
without?
You count. You in the ring count.
Yeah.
You get to seven, people still laying down.
Yeah.
And yeah. And now you got to go out and say, hey, you need to get in the ring or I'm going to count you out. Like now, I mean, you lose credibility.
Yes.
Well, you got to break your count. Now you got to get out and talk to these guys.
Look like an idiot.
Yeah, like, yeah. Hey, do y'all want me to disqualify? What are y'all thinking?
Well, what I see is that a lot of times on some of the TV wrestling I see is that a rule means something in this match, and then the next match it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
And then it just drives me crazy. And you're talking about how you get confused. I think fans get confused because they can't understand what they're supposed to be looking for. You know, and that's one of the things that we're trying to do is establish rules so that, you know, and that they're consistent from one match to the next, unless we do something special.
Right.
But you know, the fans at least can know that if you do this, you know, the referee's going to get on you.
Yeah.
You know, and he should. You know, we have a rule here right now that you can't punch with a closed fist to the face. We've talked about altering or changing it a little bit maybe, but right now it's a disqualification. And it's hard. You're talking about hard for guys to work sometimes, you know. But I did that mainly because I needed to kind of bring it back a little bit so we can at least have some kind of structure.
Well, they're going to have to learn.
But in my mind, that's not a handicap to me. Because I'll palm strike you.
Yeah, you have million
I'll
things
slap
you can
you.
Do. Yes.
I'll headbutt you.
Yeah.
You didn't say that I couldn't headbutt
exactly.
him.
Exactly.
And I would tell the ref.
Yeah.
I headbutt him.
Right. I can't use this,
but I can use this.
Use that to your advantage.
Then you might be able to get a little heat when you get something.
And that's you know, man, I'm y'all gonna make me start.
No.
We got some trunks that'll fit you.
No, we don't.
Man, I'm gonna come out of it. No,
you better stay right here. I'm gonna
say that. But, man,
all right, Bob.
Well, Bobby, I think
we might have to close shop, Teddy. I'm about to start eating people if I don't get something to eat.
Yeah, and I got to pee, Bob.
I do too, Bob.
Pee break, Bob.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You can check us out on Facebook. You can subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.